Welcome to Podcast Ed, podcast of redefinedonline.org, covering the stories behind the new definition of public education. On this episode, Step Up President Doug Tuthill speaks with Julie Young, the founding president and CEO of Florida Virtual School, the online platform that has become the biggest public school in the country. Now at Arizona State, Young joins Podcast Ed for a thoughtfully forward-thinking discussion about the new normal of public education, competency-based learning. They discuss how this model empowers parents and how virtual reality can give more children personalized access to better understand our world. They also discuss assessments turning into an experience that unfolds according to the needs of each learner and how the roles of teachers will shift dramatically. Thank you for listening and enjoy the episode.
So today I'm very pleased to welcome an old friend, Julie Young. Julie was the founder of the Florida Virtual School back in 1996, I believe. And now Julie's at Arizona State University, where she is a vice president of education outreach and student services. And she's also the managing director of ASU Prep Digital and ASU Academy. Well, real quickly, why don't you talk about what ASU Prep Academy does and what ASU Digital does?
First of all, I'm going to say thank you for having me today.
Oh, sure.
This is such a treat to be with you again, and I'm really looking forward to the conversation. ASU Prep Academy is actually a network of charter schools that the Arizona State University authorized about 10 years ago. Started out with a turnaround school in downtown Phoenix, and now is 12 schools on 7 campuses, one of which is ASU Prep Digital, which is fully virtual, and literally underpins the entire network of our brick and mortar schools, which at ASU we call those schools immersion schools. At ASU Prep Academy, we didn't get into the charter business to get into the charter business at ASU. President Crow, our amazing leader, really wanted to get into the K-12 business to demonstrate that we could create this continuum of learning, literally from pre-K through life. And so our brick and mortar, our immersion schools, create this ecosystem, or in Florida, we would call it a lab school associated with the university, with just a very, very diverse population within our schools.
So Julie, I'm excited to talk to you. You've for a long time been one of the great visionaries in K-12 education.
Thank you.
Well, it's just true. And ASU is obviously an amazing institution. As you said, your university president, Dr. Crow, is a visionary. You guys are doing some amazing things at the university level. And I know with your leadership, you're going to do amazing things at the K-12 level. So I want this conversation to be pretty much about the future. Obviously, we're going through a horrific global pandemic, but these kinds of situations also offer opportunities. I think all aspects of our lives are going to be changed moving forward. Clearly, the nature of work is changing pretty dramatically, and a lot of those changes will be permanent. Most of the kids in the country now are homeschooling, so public education is no longer simply brick and mortar campuses. It's clearly now much more expanded and redefined than it was before. And so now is it really time to start thinking about how do you reimagine public education? And you're one of the top people in the country to talk to about that. So I wanted to have a conversation about how you see things moving in the future. Let's start with your digital academy and your charter schools. How is that going to evolve? Start to paint a picture for how you see that in the future. I assume there's going to be some sort of merger in terms of content and curriculum and instruction. So talk a little bit about that and paint a picture for us about how you see that moving forward in Arizona and around the country.
You know, what's interesting, I came to ASU 3 years ago, and one of my charges at the time was to take our academy, all of our schools, into a fully blended learning environment and ecosystem. So we started to work on that literally back in 2017, about mid-2017, and have been working on that diligently for the last 3 years, and have one of our schools, which is a rural school that sits in Casa Grande, which is an area outside of Phoenix on an Indian reservation. And it's a small little school that also has a relationship with the Barca Academy, which is a soccer academy. And so that school started as a blended school, which was really an online school where kids came to school and they were online all day. And ironically enough, they were using Florida Virtual School content at the time, which I actually loved. I knew they had been trained well. And so we worked on that school independently for a year and created a model school within our network. And so what we've been doing over the last 2 years is then kind of rolling that out piece by piece in a very methodical way, with the intention that within 3 to 5 years, all of our schools would be blended personalized learning environments. Well, fast forward, digital and COVID, everyone goes home, right. And overnight, everyone becomes an online teacher. Right. The good news is that based on the prep and the professional development we had been doing over the last 2 years, we were able to pretty much seamlessly transition within 48 hours, as was the university with 130,000 students. With that said, what was important is we gave every teacher early on this past year at least a Canvas account or a Google Classroom account and training in terms of how to use that. And then we provided professional development in blended personalized learning. And then we advanced some and we let some others trail along at their own pace. So now, so when everybody went home, they at least knew how to use those tools. So now, as we all come back and we're looking at this 3 to 5 year plan that we've created, we're thinking, well, it's not going to take 5 years now.
Right.
Because all of the change management, all of the training around tools and ancillary materials, et cetera, happened. Now, are all teachers ready to become fully online digital teachers coming back in August? No. Some of them didn't particularly like it. They're really anxious to get back in their classroom. And then there are others that are really anxious to continue to experience a hybrid learning environment. And then there's others that are knocking on the digital door going, hey, we'd like to teach full time. So the reason I kind of give you that backdrop is that we made a decision pretty quickly that regardless of whether COVID was with us or not in August, we're not going back to that normal, and we are creating our new normal. And our new normal will be to offer families choices. So in August, you know, if there's a miracle and we all come back to school, we are calling that enhanced immersion. So the which will be, you know, technologically driven at a much higher level than ever before. We are also planning to offer our families and our teachers a hybrid environment. We're not sure what that looks like yet, but obviously not all students would be in school at the same time. And then we're offering all of our families, and we have about 3,200 students in all those schools, we're going to offer all those families a full-time option as well. And so with all that comes the need to have digital tools that will work in all places, right, and continuity. So last year, teachers still have the freedom and flexibility to pretty much build their own content, use their textbooks that they had, whatever materials that they wanted, as long as we met the standards and followed the guidelines, et cetera. Moving forward, they will still have agency in terms of how they augment their digital content, but every teacher will have digital content of which they will start the year with. So if we do find ourselves going home, it should be seamless.
Right.
So for us, it kind of put us in a potential situation of being able to leapfrog probably 2 years beyond where we were at the time. And we are fast and furiously looking at how do we embrace this moment and look at how we can bring technology in at a much, much deeper level to advance learning.
Do you think this is inevitable for all of public education? Obviously, there will be places where it progresses way, way slower than where you're progressing. I mean, maybe 20 years later before they get to where you are in the fall. But eventually, whether the technology will be such that and the new normal will be all families will have this sort of customized opportunities, and they'll be moving back and forth, and the digital tools will follow them. So wherever they're housed, whether it's a brick and mortar campus for one day, home the next day, a youth center the third day. Is that ultimately where we're going?
I think it is. And, you know, I think that certainly in Florida with Florida Virtual School, as we worked so closely with our homeschool community, we saw parents working to create pathways for their own students, for their own children. And so based on how the law worked in Florida, they could send their child to school for, you know, just for algebra and for sports or what have you. And then they'd use Florida Virtual School for some of the learning. They would do some of the teaching and learning. They might use another program for a piece. And we saw parents become very masterful at being engaged in their kids' education and start to map out a curriculum and a plan for them, which of course we helped and supported with. I think what's happened in these last 3 months, you know, when you talk about a disruptive innovation, I was thinking about this, you know, what is the disruptive innovation of COVID? But I think the innovation that's going to come out of it is parents have been home with their kids, watching their kids learn. They've seen the good, the bad, and the ugly. Some of them have had a great experience, and some of them have had a horrific experience. And same with teachers and students. But I do think that what parents are telling us is, you know, hey, I kind of want choices. I kind of like spending some of this time with my children. I don't want them home all the time, but I'd like to have them home some of the time. And of course, Doug, you and I know that this has been going on for years right. in our homeschool environments. This isn't new, but it will be new to public schools. And so what we're doing is we're trying to work with our collaborative partners really around the country, districts and schools, to help them upskill their teachers and their leaders so that they too can offer different types of programs to their families so their families don't need to go elsewhere to get what they need.
You know, historically in public education, we've bundled a bunch of services together. So childcare along with academic instruction, art, you know, electives, arts, et cetera, after school programs, all bundled in a single location. Do you see some of the unbundling starting to happen that's happened in other industries, and how that affect the business model of, you know, of educators? Do they start need to thinking about, as opposed to selling the whole bundle, maybe just a couple of courses, or maybe, you know, some sort of micro-credentialing in a field? I mean, talk a little bit about how the unbundling in education, which is happening in all kinds of other industries, might affect how education occurs and how families access education.
Yeah. So I think previous contents or comments about how homeschool families would piece together their yeah. students' curriculum, they started unbundling 10, 12 years ago yeah. in years of my world.
Yeah.
And I do think that that is going to be the wave of the future. It certainly is at the post-secondary level at this point.
Yes.
And it will be just imperative that our schools are able to adjust and to pivot quickly enough to keep up with the parents' choices, I guess, the parents' needs and what their desires are in terms of the choices. There are some states and school districts that are talking about wanting to have every student graduate with some type of a skilled credential. Certainly in some of our states, including Florida, we ask that all students have an online class to graduate, and that is so they are prepared to go into career or college where the training or the learning often takes place online and you don't have a choice right. to choose an in-class option.
Right.
I also think that you know, we're seeing some of that already with students who have special skills, whether it is sports or entertainment or, you know, some type of a love that they are driving towards. And so, again, they unbundle by doing some of their content online, some of their content in a classroom, and then some of their class content on the road. I also think what's really been interesting is we've had families talk about, parents talk about, you know, what happened during COVID is I think a lot of schools and teachers and leaders started out saying, okay, our day needs to mirror the school day.
Right.
So we're gonna have kids check in every hour, and we're gonna do Zoom every hour, and it's gonna mirror the school day. They quickly learned that that was not going to work, and that was going to create Zoom fatigue for parents and for students, and parents are trying to work, students are stealing the bandwidth, and you know, that was like just an early, quick learning experience for a hot minute. And so once parents had the opportunity to have almost like a playlist of what their students needed to accomplish, they were able to structure their own day. I think that's that has been an eye-opener for parents, too, because they were able to infuse many of their own learning activities or family activities in a completely different way to accomplish the same goal. And so I think that is also going to be part of the new normal. I actually think that schools who can't get in this groove are going to find themselves pretty left behind.
You know, former Governor Jeb Bush has been talking for years about competency-based education, moving away from seat time, you know, assembly line, one size fits all, to much more customized competency-based education. As you were talking, I could hear Jeb Bush's voice in the back of my head. Senator Manny Diaz out of Miami, who's one of the great visionaries, has also been talking a lot about moving towards competency-based. And do you see that happening now as part of this transition that, you know, I mean, Florida Virtual School pioneered it really in Florida. Do you see competency-based education becoming more ubiquitous in public education through this process?
Yes, I do. Going back to that whole definition of a disruptive innovation, it's going to happen by default. And so what we're looking at, certainly at ASU Prep, and again, as we work with our collaborative partners, is the recognition that we all deal with the summer slide, but the summer slide traditionally just meant that you spent the first 9 weeks reviewing with all students. And whether the student needed the review or not, typically you were reviewing with all students. Well, now that summer slide turning into the COVID slide, the predictions are that our students literally could be coming back to school with a loss of a year of math or 75% of a loss in reading. That's what NWEA was predicting about a month ago. Yeah. And so these kids are going to come back, and you're going to have some of our students whose parents delighted in this opportunity that have taken their kids beyond where they would have been if they had been in a classroom for the last 3 months. And then you're going to have some of our students whose, you know, parents through no fault of their own, maybe they, you know, weren't able to support their students in that way, or their school district didn't make the effort that maybe they could have because, you know, frankly, government gave everybody a pass, and those kids are going to be way behind. So what we're anticipating is we are looking at bringing in diagnostic tools at a minimum for math and for reading and science, which are the three tested areas, but looking at, you know, how do we on the way in the door work with each individual student to see where they are. And so this again goes back to the need for digital tools. If I'm a teacher, depending on what state I am in, I could be sitting in a classroom with 35 kids in 35 places, and without digital tools, what am I gonna do? I'm gonna teach to the middle, I'm gonna lose these kids, and I'm gonna lose these kids, and then this poor child is gonna be 3 years behind as opposed to 1 year. So our teachers, most of which have not been trained in mastery-based or competency-based learning, are going to be forced into it, whether they like it or not. And so we're trying to work with our teachers as well as our collaborative partners on what does that look like and how do you use digital tools to work for the teacher and for the student so that you can tackle this incredible challenge and reach success.
Huge challenge to a teacher training. I mean, everything you keep saying talks about building the capacity. You know, in their defense, there's people who've been teaching a certain way for 25 years, and to ask them to change is going to be tough. That's going to be a challenge. You've got a really fascinating 2-minute snippet of one of your biology classes on your site, which everybody is talking about because it's very much a virtual reality sort of 3D learner embedded kind of experience where the child can actually go into a human cell and sort of learn by doing and actually be in the middle of that environment. Talk some more about where you think that's all going. How are you thinking about curriculum and instruction using new technologies like virtual learning, virtual reality, augmented reality, the idea of learner-centered, interactive 3D learning environments as we move from 2D environments to 3D environments through technology. How are you guys thinking about this at ASU?
So that's one of the really fun things about being at ASU is we have a lot of brilliant people doing an incredible amount of work on digital assets. And by being part of the university, being embedded within the university, ASU Prep Digital has access to all those assets. And so with the biology course, for example, that you identified, that was actually created by our Center for Space Exploration at ASU using a Gates grant. And so we were then able to take that course and augment it, for lack of a better word, to become a high school course in terms of how we map to standards, Lexile levels, et cetera. And so as we think about content, we are thinking about virtual reality, augmented reality, adaptive tools. And we want, I've said it a couple of times, we want to build courses that the course works for the teacher as opposed to the other way around, and truly be able to have a massive effect on what the role of the teacher and what a career as a teacher is going to be going forward. And so, you know, what we think we will see in the next 5 to 10 years with virtual reality is a dramatic effect on the future of learning. We're going to see learner embedded interactive content. We have that in the biology course already, which is producing high levels of engagement and teacher satisfaction and support. We think it will be transformative.
You know, I also think it has a huge impact on equity. I live in St. Petersburg, and the beach is not very far from here. But I know when I taught in an inner city high school, there was a lot of children at St. Pete High, for example, who had never been to the beach. Beach was 10 minutes away, but that was outside their experience. And so you had this huge gap in terms of out-of-school learning. You know, I took my kids to Europe for 6 weeks, you know, in middle school, and we traveled around England and Scotland and had a blast, you know. And I have employees who've already taken their kids all amazing places. And I'm wondering, can we use virtual reality as a way to begin to level the playing field? So there's all this amazing abilities now for, there's a Netflix show now called Chasing Coral, I think, where it's showing how the climate change is affecting the coral reefs. And literally through virtual reality, a child could be on the Great Barrier Reef in Australia and watch the changes happening on the coral as it deals with climate change. You can put kids in all these places virtually and begin to level the playing field between families who don't have the resources to travel and take their kids places and families who do. So talk a little about how this might deal with the equity challenge we have.
Yeah, I'm all about what you're talking about, Doug. When I taught third grade years and years ago, coming from Kentucky to Florida in the first week, I found out there were kids in my third grade classroom who, again, were 15 minutes from the beach in Fort Myers, Florida, and had never seen the ocean. It was just sobering. Yeah. We have the same situation in Arizona with the Grand Canyon. So many kids who have never been there. And so I do think on an equity basis, as we're thinking about how do we open the eyes to what the world really looks like and what opportunities are out there and what career opportunities are out there. If you think about how, you know, children like your children who have had that kind of an opportunity to kind of tour the world, so to speak, and they see things in a completely different light, and they could see themselves actually living or working around with or across the ocean with people in different countries. So I do think virtual reality has the opportunity to have a pretty massive impact on on the equity of understanding of what the world is like. One of the things that I think is here today and that we believe also will have a massive equity on what goes on in our schools is, you know, virtual reality can host experiments that you can't do in the real world, either because those experiments are too expensive or they're physically impossible or they're dangerous. Yeah. You know, I can blow something up online by mixing the wrong chemical and really see, you know, what the effect of my actions have been. And so, you know, that's kind of a little simple simulation of what's going on right now that I think will expand massively.
Let's talk a little bit about assessment. You know, it's been a huge political issue for 25, 30 years now, debating about, you know, actually longer than that, the role of standardized testing and accountability assessments and things like that. How do you see assessment changing moving forward? You talked about adaptive curriculum. A lot of the adaptive curriculum and instructional systems have assessments embedded in them. They're giving constant diagnostic feedback to the student and the teacher. How's that going to play out? And do you see a new vision for how we might use assessment moving forward in using these new tools?
I absolutely do. I think between the adaptive tools and the virtual reality software that we have available today and some of the technological tools we have available for proctoring, I think that assessment will change. If we think about what just happened where we had to completely cancel testing throughout the country, it's either going to lead to one or two things. Testing will be canceled and we kind of go, oh, how are we going to look at testing differently, which I don't think will happen, or how we do it will change. And I think how we do it will change. So, you know, if we think about, and you mentioned it in terms of how formative assessment is embedded into digital course content, you know, virtual reality is responsive to the user's actions. Right. And with every action, it collects the information and makes it smarter, which then allows the digital application to drive that student experience in a different way. So much more scaffolding, much higher level challenges that will come with the learner, the system learning the learner. And you can combine learning and assessment into an experience that literally unfolds according to the needs of each learner. So I think that assessment will also be tailored to each learner. And we're doing that in some of our supportive supplemental adaptive software that many of our kids use today. But I think it will become much more mainstream, much more practical. And based on just the way that artificial intelligence is developing and how it can figure out who's actually hitting the keystrokes, I think some of the academic integrity concerns will actually start to mitigate.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about AI and machine learning, how that all fits in, because obviously you have the ability now with adaptive technology and interacting with the students to collect a lot of data on each individual child. Right. So that customization can be much more data driven, but there's a lot of data, which is why you need AI kind of software to begin to do data analytics to give feedback to the student, to the parent, to the teacher about, you know, next steps. So how have you thought about that in terms of just the data management and then using perhaps AI tools, for example, to begin to look at that data, to make sense of it, and to give real-time feedback to the teachers and the students so that data becomes really actionable?
Yep. So at ASU, and I'm sure in other places, we're using artificial intelligence to create bots that actually support things like, you know, a user has forgotten their password or needs information on when the SAT test is going to be. So some of those fundamental questions that you can train the AI bot to answer without a human being involved. I'm always very cautious about it because I am one of those people that when you call someplace and you can't get out of the loop, that you just start wanting to yell into the phone at the artificial intelligence, like, just let me talk to a person. And so, But I think that's, you know, kind of fundamental right now in terms of kind of a first step. But I have seen prototypes of content where the artificial intelligence is literally embedded into the content in such a way that it can actually read the emotions of the user on the other end. Yeah. And so based on how the user is responding in the content, whether that be how quickly the actions are or, you know, is there sarcasm in their response? Is there sadness in their response? The AI actually can then interact with that student to say, you know, tell me about your day, or talk to me a little bit about this, or it's very fascinating. And so I think as that starts to develop and we start to see AI become more embedded in the actual digital content in that way, that too is going to create some major changes in terms of how students engage and how we know that they are the learner we think that they are on the other end of the computer.
So I can imagine some teachers listening to this saying, okay, here it comes, we're gonna replace the teacher. You know, I put my old teacher union hat on. I was a teacher union leader for a long time in Florida, and of course, that's one of the sticks you would immediately grab politically, which is you're trying to do away with teachers, you can't replace teachers with technology, blah, 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 blah. So talk, of course, that's a myth, but talk a little bit about how the role of the teacher changes with all these tools that are available. How does the role of the teacher change?
Dramatically. And I want to go back to your comment, you know, Florida Virtual School started in 96, so 24 years ago. And that was one of the major concerns at the time, was it was going to replace teachers, and certainly it did not. In fact, it created new jobs for teachers and different types of jobs for teachers. And I am one of those people that personally thinks that virtual learning will never replace the teacher or the classroom, but it will change it. And I have felt that way for 24 years. Our teachers, you know, where's my phone? Our teachers are not as smart as this. And so, you know, that's just a fact. None of us are. And so our role changes by the nature of the fact that students have access to information at their fingertips, massive amounts of information. Right. So we as teachers are no longer only the givers of information that, you know, plant learning and content into students' brains. What we have to do as a teacher now, today, and moving forward, we have to teach them how to use these types of tools, how to do the research, how to go deeper. And we have to be really comfortable with that. And then we have to be that guide and that facilitator of learning as opposed to just the giver of knowledge. When I think about that concern, again, about replacing the teacher, the other place my head goes to is we all know that we have a teacher shortage in this country and that we're continuing to see a decline in the number of people that go into the profession. And once they're in the profession, we also have all seen the data where half of them leave the profession in 5 years. We need to think about that. Yeah. So it's likely not the money, or they wouldn't have gone into education anyway. It's likely the experience that they are having. And so our team is really very focused on how do we redesign the role of the teacher so that this job becomes fun again, becomes engaging, and that teachers are spending their time with students doing what they love to do, which is actually interacting and dialoguing and guiding the students, as opposed to all of that administrivia that goes on behind the scenes that just zaps our teachers' time. So we're hopeful that this type of technology that, again, works for the teacher as opposed to the other way around will actually create like a new career in terms of the role of a teacher, and that it will become much more attractive to our young people as they consider their career of the future.
Yeah, I've always thought that job satisfaction was the primary motivator for all of us in any job, particularly teaching. And it saps teachers' energies when they have kids that feel like really disengaged. you're dealing with discipline issues because the kids are bored, or the kids, you're teaching to the middle and the kids at the bottom are discouraged and then they act out, and that becomes the whole power struggle in the classroom. But again, a kid who's using virtual reality to see the Great Barrier Reef or the Grand Canyon, no human being cannot be engaged with the Grand Canyon. I mean, that just overwhelms your brain when you get there. I think that's going to change how students are engaged and their excitement about learning, which may change the whole ecosystem for teachers too, because now you got a group of kids who are all fired up. I can't wait to visit the Grand Canyon tomorrow, or to visit Edinburgh Castle, or to interview a Holocaust survivor, whatever it is. You know, that's a whole more intense, engaging curriculum that hopefully will help the teachers.
No, I heard a great analogy the other day in Michael Horn's podcast with Diane Tabner. And he said, for a child who's trying to develop their free throw skills, they go out and they just repeatedly shoot free throws over and over again. And they get the immediate feedback of, oh, I made it, let me do it again the same way. Or, oh, I missed it, let me adjust. And he said, imagine if you didn't know whether or not the ball went through the hoop until 2 days later. And he said, but this is what we do with our schoolwork. Yeah. Students turn in their work. They may not find out until 2 or 3 days later what they have done right or wrong, but yet we've already started down the path of the next chapter and left that learning behind. Yeah. So that immediate feedback, I think, is what, to your point, that's what our students get when they're out of school. Yeah. We've got to figure out a way for them to get that while they're in school.
Yeah, that was beautifully said. Again, I want to thank you for your time today, but for your leadership over several decades.
Thank you.
You've been an inspiration for me for years and years and years, and I've enjoyed watching you work over the decades. And I hope many decades to come that you continue the work, because the country, you know, needs your leadership. We need your vision, and millions of children have benefited and will continue to benefit from your efforts. So I just want